Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Balak. This week, Neiman Novetzky discusses Balak. Neiman Novetzky is a member of the Pardes faculty. And now, Neiman Novetzky.
Thank you, Larry. This week's Parsha tells the story of Bilam and Balak, a fascinating narrative filled with magic, curses, and of course, talking donkeys. It is unique in being the only extended story in the last four books of the Torah, in which nobody from the children of Israel is an active participant, and in fact, non-Jews form the entire cast of human characters. The story spans multiple chapters, the first of which tells us how Balak requested from Bilam to go and curse Bnei Israel, then goes through the back and forth as to whether Bilam will or won't go. He finally goes, and we read the episode of the talking donkey, which is of course not clear as to its message, but seems to suggest that God was not all that happy with Balaam's decision to go, and he's told that he could go, but he must not curse the nation. An additional two complete chapters detail the full contents of Balaam's soliloquies. This lengthy account almost begs the question, of what concern was it to Hashem or to the nation, whether some heathen sorcerer had nice things to say or not? Later on in Torah, we hear references back to this story, and we are told once again how Hashem, in his abounding love for the nation of Israel, refused to let Bilam curse the nation, and he transformed the curse into a blessing. But we have to wonder, why is it that the Torah takes such trouble to single out this single action of Hashem? Would there have been any significant impact if Bilam had succeeded in cursing them as per his original intention? Would it really have harmed us if he cursed? Were there any power in his words to harm or to benefit? This, of course, brings us to the general question of magic. Is there any efficiency in the use of magic? Does it really work or not? Of course, our story is not the only one that touches upon this. The command in Devarim Yudchet prohibits the forms, many forms of magic, telling us, Lo yin sabacha ma'vir b'no u'bito be'esh, kosim k'tzamin, ma'onein u'mnachesh u'mechashef. The verses there list a whole bunch of different types of magic, including divination, calling up of the dead, etc. And there, too, there's an entire discussion amongst commentators, well, does magic really exist? If someone actually went and cursed somebody else, would it bring upon them a curse or not? On those verses in Devarim, Ramban takes one approach. He writes, V'rabim yitchasdu b'nechashim, lomar, she'ein behem emet klal. As many people say, there's no such thing as magic, there's no truth in it at all. V'anachnu lo nuchal lakrish dvarim yipersimu le'enevom. He says, but we can't deny things that are evident to our eyes. V'rabotinu gamkin yildu behem. And our sages also admitted to them. Ramban is on one side of the spectrum here, suggesting that actually there is some truth to magical practices. Some humans do have the ability to manipulate or access impure powers so as to bring harm to others. He suggests that somehow Bilam's knowledge of magic enabled him to manipulate the celestial spheres and to negatively affect individuals or nations. Now one must ask, if one does believe in magic, does this mean that this power, that this special sense that some human has, is out of the hands of God? Is a distinct power from the powers of good that Hashem does? Now, not surprisingly, all the commentators who believe in magic, or at least most of them, suggest that, no, of course not. Even though someone might be able to learn the art of manipulating the stars, one wouldn't be able to do so if Hashem did not want that person to be harmed. The Netziv suggests, for example, that Bilam's magic here was what we might call the power of the evil eye. And he suggests that that's actually built into nature. And as long as Bilam was in sight of the nation, he really could have brought them harm. By the way, he suggests that this is why in every single aspect of the story, it talks about Bilam going to see Bnei Israel. He needed to see them in order to use whatever this evil eye is. Nonetheless, of course, the Netziv tells us Hashem, though, has the power over nature, and he can intervene to remove this evil eye. Now, there are many parallel cases in Tanakh which would seem to support the idea that there is real power in blessings and curses. For example, the actions of Rivka and Yaakov to receive Yitzchak's blessing only makes sense if one assumes that there was what to be obtained by that blessing, that the blessing actually had the power to grant something. In addition, there's a story at the end of the book of Shmuel, which is known as the Ishet Ba'alat Ta'ov, about a sorceress who seems to bring Shmuel the Navi, Shmuel the prophet, back to life. This too, on the simple understanding of the story at least, seems to assume special powers, and that the lady really had the ability to bring Shmuel back to life. Now one might ask, if there really is such powers, why should magic necessarily be prohibited? Meaning, we understand why black magic, if one is using this magic to do something negative, it would be prohibited. But why, if someone has the ability to bring something positive, why should that magic be prohibited? Ramban writes, "V'asar lecha hanechashim v'aksamim, v'avur she'asar lecha ma'ala gdola, v'titcha elyon akol v'yei ha'aretz, she'akim v'kacha b'kirbacha navi, v'yitim dvarav b'fiv." Ramban suggests, actually, that the other nations use magic, and Hashem prohibited it from us, not so much because there was something necessarily inherently wrong in all magical practices, but rather because He gave us a substitute, that substitute being the prophet. He says, "Ata tishma mimenu ma'yif'al kel, v'lo titzterich ata ba'atidot o kosemu menachesh." He says, if you want to know the future, you could just go and ask your prophet. You have no need to go to some type of a diviner or some type of a magician. Because when they get their magical knowledge, it is not an exact science, and they might sometimes be wrong. But in contrast, a prophet will be able to know what it is that Hashem wants, and will always be telling the truth. So according to Ramban, magic, being an inexact science, is not necessarily the best route to go. Hashem gives us a substitution in the form of prophets who can perform miracles, who can go and tell the future, but are always based on God. Others suggest a slightly different view of magic, and Yechezkel Kaufman suggests that one of the problems with the art of magic is that the successful practitioner begins to think of himself as on par with God. The person gains lots of pride at recognizing that he has certain powers that others don't, and therefore it is prohibited. He suggests that this is the entire message of the story of the angel and the donkey that come to Bilam. In that episode, the donkey sees an angel in its path, which Bilam does not see. As a result, Bilam keeps on hitting his donkey until the donkey points out that there's an angel in his path. Yechezkel Kaufman suggests that Hashem sent this angel and donkey to dispel such thoughts from Bilam, thoughts that he might come to think of himself as being partially divine, by teaching him that his powers of sight were not as good as he thought. The Tanhuma similarly suggests that the incident was supposed to warn Bilam that just like the donkey's mouth was under the control of God, so too, Bilam would only be able to say what Hashem desired. Having the ability to do magic does not mean that you are in control of God, that you could do whatever you want. God ultimately is always in control. That's one approach. A middle approach takes a different direction. They suggest that actually, no, Bilam's curse did not really have any power whatsoever. Nonetheless, since both the children of Israel and the other nations around them believed in the power of curses and in the power of magic, Bilam's words nonetheless had the potential to negatively affect the Israelites. So how does this work? Ibn Kaspi tells us, "Yesh l'to'en she'it'on aleinu b'inyan klilat Bilam, she'bemet lo haya l'tikun, lo mi'ichut ha'midaber v'lo mi'ichut ma'asah." Says, really, on one hand, the curse of Bilam really couldn't have done anything. Not by the speaker, not by actions. Anam, da she'in chashash lo tutabar mi'aratzmo ki'in bo mamash. There's really nothing in it. Aval mitzad ha'mikablim, ritzoni Yisrael ha'shomim, ayodim shehu mikalam. But nonetheless, it does have the power to harm because of those that accept the words. What does he mean? If you believe that Bilam had the power to curse and you hear that curse, you will naturally become very anxious and frightened. And so Ibn Ibn Qasbi suggests that since many amongst the nation would have been anxious, believing erroneously that it could harm them, Hashem recognized this, and even though he knew that their concern was unfounded, he still didn't want them to be nervous, and so he prevented Bil'am from cursing. Abarbanel takes a very similar approach, but suggests that the problem wasn't just the anxiety of Bnei Yisrael, but rather how the knowledge that he had cursed would affect the people surrounding the nation. He said that since foreign nations held Bilam's curses in high regard, they would trust in his words to attack the now cursed Israelites. When they hear that Israel is cursed, they'll say, oh, great time, let's go and wage war. And to prevent such attacks, Hashem not only barred Bilam from cursing, but actually had him bless the nation. And in so doing, he accomplished the exact opposite. He had the other nations thinking that Bnei Israel were a blessed nation, now coming to fear the nation of Israel. He actually points to the Canaanites' fear of the nation when we see that Bnei Israel are crossing the Jordan and they hear from Rahab what the nations in Canaan were feeling towards Bnei Israel. They hear that they're terrified. He suggests the reason they're terrified of the nation isn't just the miracles that God did, but actually the fact that they had heard that Bil'am had blessed them. Now one might question, does God really act based on unfounded beliefs? If there really was no reason to be afraid, would God really act in order to calm them down? Ibn Qasbi suggests that there are other examples of this in Tanakh, and he points to the command to spread blood on the doorposts during the plague of firstborns. He questions, well, why did God really need to spread blood on the doorposts? If it was really for God so that he could skip over the children of Israel's homes, well, God didn't need a sign. He could just skip over their homes by himself without such a sign. And so he says, no, actually, the blood was for Bnei Israel. The people of the time believed that blood had the power to ward off evil. And therefore, being very scared during that plague of firstborns, God said, feel free, go and put blood on your doors, because he knew that would calm the nation. So Ibn Qasbi suggests, yes, several times in Tanakh we might see that Hashem responds to erroneous beliefs, because even if you're wrong, your fear is still true fear. And for that, God is willing to go and act. This leads us into the third approach. The approach, of course, that says, no, there's no such thing as magic, and no, no matter what, Bilam's words would have had no harmful effect on Bnei Israel. This is, of course, taken by people like the Rambam, Ibn Ezra, as we would perhaps guess, people who are more rationalist in their approach to life. And so the Rambam, again, on those verses in Devarim which talk about not divining, he says, Asur lish'ol ba'ov, sorry, let me say that again, Asur lish'ol ba'ov, Udvarim ha'ilu kulan divrei sheker v'kazav. He says, there's a prohibition against divining. Why? Because all of these things are falsehoods, are nothingness. Ibn Ezra says similarly, he says, Hakatov lo asar ha'emet, rak ha'sheker. He says, why is magic prohibited? Not because there's truth in it, but for the very fact that it is false, that there's nothing to it. So both of these commentators and others too suggest, no, magic doesn't exist. There's no ability for someone to actually curse someone and that would actually really bring harm to them. And it's for that reason that such things, in general, are prohibited. If so, though, one has to ask, then why bother? Right? What in the world did God need to go and stop Bilam from cursing Bnei Israel? Let him curse. Nothing will happen. Who cares? So these commentators suggest that Hashem had to thwart Bilam's curse to prevent the desecration of his name and to show his love for Israel. What does this mean? The story following the Bilam narrative tells of a Bnei Israel's sin in Baal Peor, and as a result of that sin, many of them are killed by a plague. Comes Ibn Ezra and Rabag, and both of them suggest that why is it that Hashem wanted to ensure that Bil'am didn't curse the nation? He wanted to do this so that no one would attribute the later plague to Bil'am's curse, rather than recognizing it as a punishment for sin. Knowing that he's about to bring a punishment to Bnei Israel, God says to himself, but if I let Bil'am curse, all of the people will view that curse as having actually come to fruition. They'll say, oh, he cursed, oh, came a plague. And none of them will realize that actually, no, the plague did not come from Bilam, but rather because B'nai Israel sinned. And for that reason, Hashem had to make sure that Bilam didn't curse the nation. Ho Moshe takes a different approach, and he says, no. A false prophet, under utterance of a curse in the name of God, especially upon his chosen nation, that in itself is a desecration. Hashem could simply not allow someone to curse B'nai Israel in his name, because that act alone is a negative act. Whether or not it had any impact on the nation was irrelevant. Using God's name to curse the nation was a problem. And it's for that reason that God stopped Bilam. One has to wonder, according to this approach, if Bilam really had no powers, why is it that he was able to get such a reputation that Balak would come and approach him and say, oh, Asher Ta'or you are, I know that whoever you curse is cursed. Where did he earn that reputation from? For Ramban, of course, this is not a problem. He believes that he actually did have the power to curse, and thus he could have earned such a reputation. But for this approach, if he really was never able to curse, how can he earn that reputation? Even as in Rabbag's answer, that Bilam had certain astrological knowledge that enabled him to recognize when misfortune or fortune was to befall a person. And as such, he was able to curse or bless those whom he knew were to receive such a fate. So these commentators do believe that there's some way, perhaps, of telling the future, and that Bilam used that knowledge that he had to curse people, knowing that in their future there was going to be some negative thing, and so he'd curse a person who had that negative thing in their future. And as such, he was able to gain his reputation. If one wonders what, according to this approach, is the point of the story, why waste 4 chapters of Torah telling us about somebody who did something that really had no effect anyway? Nachama Leibowitz answers and says, actually, the whole point of the story is to teach us this message that magic doesn't exist. She says the whole incident was meant to mock the belief in the efficacy of magic to force the hands of God. And so, especially perhaps this little episode of the donkey, she says, teaches this message to Bilam and to all the readers of the story as well. Bilam, who thought he could see more than the ordinary human, and that he held the power to hurt or harm in his mouth, was caught that he could not even see what his donkey could, and that his mute animal, too, could speak, but only on God's command. The story comes to teach that, no matter what, it is God who controls. People do not have that power, no matter how much they might believe that they have that power. It really doesn't exist. So to conclude, you could decide by yourself whether or not you believe in magic, but I think this story has several messages to teach us regardless. One is, sometimes, even if you don't believe in magic, you do believe in certain powers that you have. And sometimes these lead us to think that we are in control, leading us to forget that ultimately we're not in control, but God is. And so that's one message. A second message, I think, that comes out perhaps from the second approach is that sometimes we don't recognize that even though we might not believe in something, somebody else might. And even if that belief is unfounded, that doesn't mean that it's not truly affecting that person. Even if there's no such thing in magic as magic, if B'nai Israel believes in it, their fear is still a real concrete fear. And someone who might not believe in magic should still respect that other person's fear. And so, with those messages, I leave you to ponder the story of Balak and Bilam, and have a wonderful Shabbat.
Thank you, Nema. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you in the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.